All right, morning. Today's daf and Sanhedrin's daf. Hey, we are in the Dal Amud Beis. We are continuing from yesterday's discussion regarding Yeshem LaMikra LaYeshem LaMesoret. So I pointed out yesterday that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe the Torah, so he gave him a lot of Mesorah, a lot of tradition. And part of the tradition is that the words in the Torah are maybe spelled one way but pronounced another way. And both the Elu Ve'Elu, they're both obviously part of Halach LaMoshe MeSinai, as I mentioned yesterday after the daf. Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying to communicate multiple ideas at the same time. I myself may not be familiar with everything that's trying to be communicated, but nevertheless, so it's all part and parcel of Torah MeSinai. The question that the Tanaim are dealing with is when deciding the halacha, determining the halacha. So, what is a greater determinant? Is a greater determinant going to be the Yeshem LaMesoret, the way that the Torah is written, or is a greater determinant Yeshem LaMikra, or no, it's maybe Kriya, the way it's pronounced? Is a greater determinant. So you remember yesterday, so we spent the Amud Aleph of yesterday's Daf Dala Amud Aleph presenting five Tanaim are all of the opinion that Yeshem LaMikra, that the pronunciation of the Torah is going to be the determining factor in terms of deciding the halacha. Then, as we turned the page and we went to the Amud Beis, the Gemara basically deconstructed the argument. The Gemara says that these Tanaim may all not be hinging on this very issue, but each Tana on each particular issue is actually going to be talking or focusing on a different issue, and not Yeshem LaMikra versus Yeshem LaMesoret, but each one of them. And the Gemara tackled each one of these positions in of itself to point out that perhaps it's not a global position of Yeshem LaMikra, but it could be just simply localized debates on each of these and each one of these fronts. The Gemara, as I mentioned yesterday, turned on this issue one more time. So we are going to pick it up on Daf Dalam and Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. Udikule Amma. I read this line yesterday. I'm going to reread it again. Udikule Amma Yeshem LaMikra. The Gemara says, does everyone subscribe to this idea of Yeshem LaMikra? Meaning that pronunciation is going to be the key determining factor. V'atayin, the Gemara says, but consider the following braisa. Lito tafos, lito tafos, lito tafos. It says in the Torah the word totafos three times. Two of the three times it's spelled chaser, which means that even though it's all pronounced the same, but in terms of the way it's written, so it's singular, singular, plural, which means in numbers 1, 1, and 2. So that brings us to a total of 4. Hare kan arba divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So that gets us to 4, and this teaches us the halacha that when it comes to the tefillin shel rosh, it's made up of 5 boxes, 5 compartment boxes, based on the fact that the Torah writes it chatzar chaser malay. Clearly, according to Rabbi Shmuel, he's operating under the assumption of Yesh Eim LaMesoret, that the way that the Torah is spelled is going to be the determining factor, and not the way the Torah is pronounced. Just give me one second. Rabbi Kiva Omer Eino Tzarech. Rabbi Kiva says, no, unnecessary, meaning, I don't need that drasha because I have another way to drasha in the Pasuk that gets me to the number 4. Tat Bekafti Shtayim. In the Kafti language, the word Tat is 2. Pat Ba'afrika Shtayim. In the African language, the word Pat is 2. So that is how Rabbi Akiva arrives at the conclusion that Totafos is a composite of 2 words in 2 different languages. And as I pointed out yesterday, yes, of course, it's strange that we're using other languages and encrypting it in the Torah. It could be rooted in the idea, but this is a thesis, it's a theory. I cannot say that this is so. It could be rooted in the Torah that all the 70 languages of the world are really rooted somehow in Lashon HaKodesh. But I don't know. In other words, I'm more comfortable just simply saying I don't know. I don't know how it is that Rabbi Kiva is doing this, darshaning the Torah and using other languages to darshan the Torah. I'm just more comfortable saying I don't know. I'm fine with I don't know. I can live with it. But what comes out, however, is that the Rabbi Yishmael clearly holds Yeshem LaMesoret, not LaMikra. Yes, Eddie.
This goes back to the time of Tanaim.
Right. Agreed. What we discussed yesterday. Again, I just go back to the Gemara Kedushin. Ein anu bikiyam b'chaseres v'yaseres. We don't have proficient knowledge on which word should include the vav, which word should not include the vav. We don't have the proficiency.
But which vav of the third letter of Tokos makes it plural? The first vav or the second vav?
My second vav. I would say the second vav.
I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
If you look in the Torah.
Right. No. We pointed this out yesterday. Meaning that the way the Gemara is presenting and the way we have our Chumashim are not the same. Right. We pointed this out yesterday. So Ela La'olam Pligi. So the Gemara says, okay. So we're going to go back to our starting point, which is the Tanaim debate this very issue of whether or not Yeshem LaMikra or Yeshem LaMisora. So it's open for a debate. And the Gemara says, V'ani miliki pligi hecha deshani krami mizort. The Gemara says, and when do we have such a debate? We'll have such a debate where the Torah is written one way and pronounced another way. So if there's a discrepancy in terms of the way it's written and the way it's pronounced, and again, I keep coming back to this point because I cannot understand enough. They're both Torah Misinai, meaning it's both part of the tradition. And again, why is there a discrepancy? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to communicate multiple ideas. So there's a discrepancy. Once there's a discrepancy, so then what do we do in terms of determining the halacha? Which one is a greater is a greater force? So the Gemara says, that's a machlokas. Okay, now, avahai chelev chalav, the Gemara says, but let's go back to an example that we talked about yesterday. The Torah says, lo sevash gdi b'chalev imo, which we know means that you're not allowed to cook a meat in its mother's milk. Right? The prohibition of cooking basa b'chalev together. The Gemara, for a moment yesterday, entertained the idea that it's not really chalav, but it's chelev. And what the Torah is prohibiting is the cooking of meat and the animal's fat together. We entertained that for a moment yesterday. The Gemara immediately dismissed it. The Gemara now is telling us that here, there's no discrepancy between the way it's read and the way it's written. Meaning, if the Torah wanted to communicate the idea of chalav, the Gemara is going to write it, ches, lamed, beis. Now, it's true that it also pronounces the same words of chelav, but here, we don't have a discrepancy. It's written the same way it's pronounced. Now, there's another way to pronounce it, but there's not going to be any debate over here. There's not going to be even another opinion over here. We all know it's chalav. So pronunciation obviously becomes a determining force. The Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? Why don't we consider Vahaditanya, the Gemara says, Vahare, the Gemara says, why don't we consider Yireh, Dechi Hadadeinenu, there's a mitzvah in the Torah of seeing a Kadosh Baruch Hu three times a year, what's what we call Aliyah L'Regel, going up to Yerushalayim on the Yomim Tovim. Sukkos, Pesach, Shavuos. There's a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, and incorporating this mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel is also to bring a carbon olah. The Gemara in Masechta Chagiga discusses this extensively, this mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, and in the very beginning of the Gemara in Chagiga over there, and the Gemara over here is quoting it, is that we know that there's an interesting patur, there's an exemption for somebody not having to go to Eretz Yisrael, and that is if he cannot see out of both eyes. If he can only see out of one of his two eyes, so he has a patur aliyah l'regel. He doesn't have to go make aliyah. Okay. Why? I mean, it's much easier to say the what than the why. But the Gemara over here bases it on the following drasha. It's an interesting drasha. The Gemara quotes the following brisa. Yochanan ben Dehavai Omer Mishum Rebbe Yehuda ben Tema Suma Be'echad Me'enav. If somebody's blind in one eye, Pater Min Hari'iyah, he's exempt from the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel and the Olas Hari'iyah. So Shenamar Yireh Yira'eh. That the Torah says Yireh Yireh. Now it's not a double language over here, but rather it is. We're looking at one pasuk, and within this one pasuk that we're looking at right now, it is. It could be pronounced Yireh. It can also be pronounced Yireh. Those are two acceptable pronunciations. Now again, we have a Mesorah, we have a tradition in terms of how it's pronounced, but it could be Yireh Yireh. Now the difference between those two words, Yireh means to see, Yireh means to be seen. One's active, the other's passive. Yireh is binyan kal, Yireh is nifal. So the Gemara says, Kederuch shebal liros kach bal leiraos. So the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees you is the way that you need to be seen. Ma liros b'shtei anav af leiraos b'shtei anav. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees you, he sees you with full capability. Now we're going to say two eyes, but of course we don't mean two eyes. We're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's kav yachol. It says, you know, to the best of our understanding, it's just the words we use to conceptualize. But obviously he's not a physical physical being, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees you with full capability. So therefore, when you're seen in Yerushalayim, you have to be able to see with that full capability. If you're blind in one eye, so you have a patur, you have an exemption. So the Gemara says, so over there, what do we see? That the exemption is built on this idea that even though it's pronounced one way, but the way is written also can operate as a means of determining the halacha. So the Gemara says, so what you just said, basically scratch it. Meaning you said that if we have a way to pronounce it, that's it. There's no other way to look at the word in the Torah. It's not true. It's simply not true. The example we just gave over here, where the Torah is pronounced Yireh, meanwhile, we could pronounce it Yireh based on the way that it's written, and we're going to darshan based on that. So the Gemara says, so even your position of once there's a pronunciation and there's no discrepancy in how it's written, that's it. Story's over. Story's not over. So the Gemara says, Elamer v'achabre d'ravik amakra. So again, now we're going back to the pasuk of Lo Sivashuk Dibachalevimo. And the question that we asked and we're re-asking again is, how do I know it's milk? Maybe the word is chelev. So the Gemara says, Lo Sivashuk Gadi derech bishol asra Torah. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's predicated on the following. When the Torah introduces us to this prohibition, alos vashagadi, it's bishul. It's cooking that the Torah prohibits. Now, the way Rashi understands the Gemara's conclusion over here, cooking as opposed to what? Meaning, again, we have two options in terms of how to read the pasuk in the Torah. It's either chalav or chalav. Now, again, we don't really have two options, but we're entertaining two options. One is milk and the other is the fats of the animal. Rashi says, the way Rashi understands the Gemara over here, chalav obviously is a liquid. And when we're talking about the process of cooking, it is much more precise to describe cooking in a liquid. Chelev, on the other hand, is fat. So what do you do with fat? You're frying fat. And it's delicious, but that's just my editorial note. But you're frying fat, you're not cooking. And
you couldn't eat chelev in the first place anyway.
I'll get to that. That's a good point. I'm going to get to that point in just a second. So Rashi says that because the Torah uses the verb of cooking, so cooking is more relevant to milk, which is a liquid, as opposed to chelev, where chelev, it's not cooking. Rashi uses the word tigun. It's frying. So that is a compelling reason in terms of how we know that the word is chalav, not chelev. Again, we also have a mesorah, but as the Gemara pointed out, the mesorah may not be enough. Okay, there's another way to understand the Gemara over here, and in terms of its conclusion, again, the Gemara's concluded that when it comes to the word chalav in the Torah, we know it's chalav, and how do we know that? So, because the Torah says derech bishul asr Torah, and therefore what? So Tosfos himself also addresses this, and Tosfos says that perhaps another way to understand the Gemara is derech bishul asr Torah debelo bishul shari, meaning that what the Torah is introducing us to is that when does basa b'chalav become prohibited? Only once they're cooked together, meaning you're taking two different ingredients, each one of them in of themselves is mutter, you're then cooking them together, and then at the point of bishul, then it becomes asr. And as Tosfos points out, and as Ben just pointed out, if the word was not chalav, but the word was chelev, you don't have this. Meaning chelev is already asr in the Torah. Chelev is one of the prohibited parts of an animal. In fact, chelev is actually, from a punishment standpoint, more serious than eating, let's say, non-kosher animal. Eating non-kosher animal, that's a lav in the Torah. Eating chelev of a kosher animal, that's chiyuv kares. So it's already prohibited. So if the isser would have been chelev and basar, so it's, I'm not taking two things which are mutter, cooking them together in order to create isser. It's already asr. One of the two ingredients is asr. And so therefore Tosfos says maybe that's the pshat in the Gemara. Although to be fair and to be honest, Tosfos doesn't love this pshat, and you could see the Tosfos why he doesn't love that pshat. Anyway.
So a cheeseburger would be at least a minute.
Right. So there is a discussion in the halacha. This is what's it called? This takes me back to my days of Yerodea. So there is a discussion in the halacha. Rabbi Kiva Eger, I'm going on memory. So please, you know, don't quote me, even though I'm being recorded. So there has a discussion about whether or not if you fry meat in milk, right, is that considered basa b'chalav? And there's an argument to make that it's not basa b'chalav min haTorah. Still going to be obviously be asr min derabbanan, and that goes without saying. But it's right. There's an argument to make. Okay. There's also another issue, which is that the meat or whatever. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. Tanu Rabbanan. Dina Mamnos B'Shlosha. Okay, we're on the bottom of Daf Dalam and Beis. We're starting today's Daf Hey, and we start off with a statement which we already know. It's kind of like the call and call. So call and card of the first number of Dapim. How many judges do I need to adjudicate in a case of monetary law? So we know the magic number is 3. We've been saying that now for the last 3 days. Daf Beis Gimel Dalet. And as we start today's Daf Hey, so we start off with the same position. Tanu Rabbanan Dina Mamnos B'Shlosha. The Braisa says that when you judge a case, you need 3 judges. Now, if you're Mumchel Rabbim, so if you are an expert and you have received smicha, so you can judge even as an individual. I'm Rav Nachman Kagon Ana Dan Dina Mamnos B'Yechidi. So Rav Nachman says, I'll give you a good example of somebody who has the kind of proficiency and the authorization that he can judge monetary cases by himself. Rav Nachman says, who can I present to you as a good example of such a person? Rav Nachman says, me. I'm an excellent example. Rav Chia says, and me too. I also have the ability to judge monetary cases even as an individual. So the over here says, look, we now know, we have now two wonderful examples of Amoraim, Tanaim, specifically Rav Nachman and Rav Chia, who they say that they have the kind of ability to judge cases even as a single individual. But the Gemara now wants to try to pinpoint. We know that they can judge, and then we know that they can judge as single individuals. What exactly is it about them? What are the adjectives that we have to describe them that give them this ability? So we have the examples, but we don't have the guidelines behind the examples. So the Gemara goes on to ask this very question. So Ibayilahu, fourth line down, could go Nana de Gamirna, Visavirna. So like me, who is learned and understands, and Nikitna Rishusa, and also on top of that, I've been conferred authorization. What you and I may call smicha. In other words, but I'm not going to use the word smicha. I'm just for the rest of this morning, I'm going to use the word authorization. And we were authorized to do so. Aval. Lo nakir reshusa dina lo dina. Or maybe no. Maybe, another. Right, I'm sorry. Within this first position, if you are smart and intuitive and understand one thing from another, but you have not been conferred authorization, then you cannot judge a case as a single individual. Or maybe no. Maybe just simply having the cognitive ability is sufficient grounds in order to judge a case by yourself. Rav Nachman and Rav Chia are pointing to themselves as good examples of people who can judge, meaning that the criteria of being able to judge a case by yourself is just simply that you have proficiency and cognitive ability, but to be authorized is not a necessary component. And this brings us now basically to today's daf and our discussion in today's daf, and that is going to be, do you need to be authorized in order to judge a case? Now, what does authorization do? So primarily, and this is going to be a good part of the theme of today's daf, primarily what authorization does is it gives you a certain amount of immunity. Okay, right? Professionals in their profession, depending on whatever the profession is, so if they're licensed, and certainly if they're insured, but they operate with a certain amount of immunity, meaning that, look, we're all humans and we all tend to make mistakes, and a small mistake, and as we're going to be discussing over the course of today's daf, meaning we could be talking about small mistakes, we could be talking about very large mistakes, or I should say better, mistakes that lead to major repercussions, but, in other words, if you are authorized to do so, you're going to be careful, you're going to practice as carefully as you can, and in the event that every now and then you make a mistake, so because you have authorization, so therefore you operate under a certain amount of immunity. Okay, the Gemara later on will point out that there are certain mistakes that are just so boneheaded, if you will, that in other words, that even when operating under immunity, you can't, and it's such terrible malpractice that you can't be exempted from it. But a subtle mistake, however, if you're authorized, so you operate under a certain amount of immunity. So the Gemara now wants to know, basically, what now becomes the criteria of judging by yourself? The Mar Zutra Breder of Nachman Dandina Vata. The Gemara tells the following story of Mar Zutra, the son of Rav Nachman, so he judged the case by himself, and he made a mistake. Also, the comment to Rav Yosef Amarlei. So he goes to Rav Yosef, and he says to Rav Yosef as follows. Im kibucha alaisa lo seshalim. Look. You went to the two litigants, they asked you to judge the case. If they gave you permission, they basically signed a waiver, so then you're fine. So then you don't have to pay for the mistake that you made. V'lo zilshlim. So the Gemara says, but if they didn't sign any waivers, and you decided that you're going to judge the case on your own, and you made a mistake, so you're going to have to pay for the mistake that you made. This is what Rav Yosef is telling the son of Rav Nachman, who served as a judge by himself. Shma mina, the Gemara says, so what do you see clearly over here? Ki lo nakat reshus adina adina. So shma mina. So the Gemara says that in terms of the ability to judge, so a single person has the ability to judge. Meaning you don't need to be conferred authorization in order to judge. But in terms of being provided the immunity in the event that you make a mistake, so for that, either you're going to be receiving authorization, or you'll have the two litigants signing some form of waiver. Otherwise, you're going to be responsible for any mistake that you make in your judgment, in your ruling. Okay.
Who
what the error is? Huh? Right. In other words, there has to be. It's a fair question. I'm guessing right now. The Gemara doesn't say this, so I'm on my own. I'm saying all this on my own. Maybe there's some sort of appeal process. I know, well, later on in the third parak, we're going to be talking about appeal process. There has to be some sort of appeal process, and you take it to a higher court, and I'm guessing that over here, that would be the process in terms of determining whether a mistake was made or not. But again, I'm guessing. Amarav. Hamanda by lemeidan dina v'itami by lemiftere, lishko reshusa mi bay reshkalusa. So Rav makes the following statement. If a person wants to judge, and he also wants to be able to work under a certain amount of protection and immunity, so what you need to do is you need to get authorization from the reshkalusa. Now, once you receive permission from the reshkalusa, so you are now operating under immunity. So how does that work exactly? So I'm reading a Rashi. Now, we haven't seen this Rashi yet in the Gemara, but Rashi over here tells us that when you receive authorization from the leader, so he has the right and the ability to provide for you immunity based on the principle of Hefker based on Hefker. Right? We just talked about this recently. We're speaking about it now again. This idea that Basin has the ability to take money away from one person and to give it to another. They are given that kind of executive privilege. It's an executive right. And as we're going to be talking in just a moment, it's not just so much an executive right, it's really a right of leadership. Meaning it's really the right of a melech, a king. A king has the ability to simply just take money away from people. In other words, he has that kind of executive privilege. When you are provided authorization from the Reish Galusa, so the Reish Galusa basically serves as the de facto king, and once he confers upon you the permission to judge and adjudicate, so you can do so with the protection of immunity in the event that you make a mistake. And Shmuel makes the same statement as well, that you get permission from the Reish Galusa once you are given authorization to do so. So now you are what in our parlance what you would describe as being licensed. So now you are operating under a certain amount of authorization. You are basically now an agent of the king. You are under the monarchy, and as such, you are operating with a certain amount of immunity. Okay, and now here comes an interesting Gemara. Every daf is interesting. Today's daf super interesting. Here comes an interesting discussion coming up. In the time of the Gemara, we had two communities. We're basically going to be focusing on the generation that goes from the Tanaim to the Amorim, where you had two communities existing, one in Bavel and one in Eretz Yisrael. The one in Eretz Yisrael was run and operated under Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. In fact, that's why he's called Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. He was the leader of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. And pretty much at the same time in Bavel, you also had a governing body in Bavel, and we describe him as the Reish Galusa. Okay. Now, in terms of who is more of the leader of the Jewish people, and who is given more power, so to say, who has more power? So, the correct answer, as we're going to see very clearly in the Gemara, is the Reish Galusa. Now keep in mind, this is after Churban Bayis Sheni, this is the destruction of the Second Temple. Many Jews have gone out to Bavel. There is a very large Jewish population in Bavel. And as we're going to be talking about in just a moment, the Reish Galusa was the leader of that Jewish people, was considered more of the leader of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael at the time, just a fraction, a shadow of what it once was in terms of an autonomous Jewish Jewish governing body. The governing Jewish body wasn't even in Yerushalayim at the time. It was up north. It was in Tveria. It was in Sipori. And so at that point in time, you did have a governing body, but they were not as great as a governing body in Bavel. I know it's interesting, and it's going to be very clear in the Gemara. And so what the Gemara now is going to be discussing is, so let's say you now receive this kind of authorization. You got Rishus, in order so that now you can practice under immunity. Better to get Rishus from Bavel, or better to get Rishus from Eretz Yisrael? Based on what I just told you, you now know the answer to that question. And we're going to see the Gemara say it inside. Pshita, the Gemara says, the following is obvious. Mehachalach, mehasam lahasam, o mehachalahasam mehani. If let's say you received authorization, let's start off hacha lahacha, here to here, meaning you received authorization from the local governing body here in Bavel, which is the Reish Galusa, in order to judge here in Bavel. That's good. That's very good. You now serve with immunity. If you receive authorization in Eretz Yisrael in order to adjudicate in Eretz Yisrael, that's also good. If you receive authorization here in Bavel in order to adjudicate in Eretz Yisrael, that's also good. The Gemara says, the Gemara says, here in Bavel, so the governing body, the Reish Galusa, he's considered the Shevet. And in Eretz Yisrael, he's considered Mechokek. Mechokek, we would describe in our language, I'm just giving an example, he's like a governor. But the Reish Galusa is the king. He's a Shevet, and in Eretz Yisrael, Mechokek. Certainly has authority, certainly is a ruler, but more like a governor. The Gemara says, Kedetanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda. The Torah says that the scepter is not allowed to leave Shevet Yehuda. Eila Rosh Galios Shevet Bavel. And this is speaking specifically about the leadership in Bavel. Sheroden and Yisrael B'Shevet. They rule the Jewish people using the scepter. They are considered like the monarchy of the Jewish people. Umechokik Mi Bein Raglav, Eila B'nei Banav Shel Hillel, Shem Lamdim Torah B'Rabim. And the Mechokik is a reference to the descendants of Hillel, who are teaching Torah, so they're more like the governor, but not like the king. So, here's what we've just learned together. If you received authority from the Reish Galusa, universal authority, you can now judge in Bavel, in Eretz Yisrael, and it's universally accepted. If, however, you only received authorization from Eretz Yisrael, so it is not the monarchy, it's not the Shevet, it's just the Mechokek, and therefore, locally, you can adjudicate. But you will not be able to adjudicate outside, or at least the Gemara is presenting this now as a question. Mehasam lahachamai. If you receive Rishus in Eretz Yisrael, can you now adjudicate with immunity here in Bavel? Gemara says, I wonder. Tashma. Gemara says, the Rabba Bar Chana Dandina Vata. The Gemara tells the story of Rava Bar Chana. Okay, Rabba Bar Chana over here, I know this is going to sound a little bit strange, but Chana is a man's name. Now, I understand elsewhere in the Gemara, we talked about Rabba Bar Chana. Okay, and over there, maybe a woman's name. But over here, I know what I'm speaking about, because I know the Gemara coming up, so it's a man's name. So Rabbi the son of Chana, Dandina Vita, so he judged the case. He made a mistake. Also coming to Rabbi Chia, he goes to Rabbi Chia. Amar Lei, and Rabbi Chia says to him, Ikabucha alaycha lo sashlim, v'ilo zilshlim. Did the litigants sign a waiver? So if they signed a waiver, so then you're good to go. But if they did not sign a waiver, so then you're responsible for the mistake you made. You're financially responsible. V'hav Rabbi Barchan Rishos Ahavanaket. So the Gemara says, now he was given authority, but he was only given authority in Eretz Yisrael, and he was adjudicating in Bavel. So therefore, you see very clearly, so the Gemara says, so the clear conclusion of the Gemara is that receiving Rishus in Eretz Yisrael is only going to help you locally, but it is not universally accepted. And when you are now judging a case in Bavel, your Eretz Yisrael Rishus is going to be ineffective. To which the Gemara says, the Gemara says, say Bahadid de Beresh Galusa. The Gemara tells another story of Rava Baravuna, who was having an argument with members of the house of the Resh Galusa. Amar Lav Minach Nikitin Rishusa. Nikitin Rishusa me Abba Mari Vabba Mari me Rav. Virav me Rabbi Chia. Virabbi Chia me Rabbi. And basically he says to the members of the house of the Resh Galusa, why don't argue with me? I received authorization from my father, Rav Huna. Rav Huna in turn received authorization from his Rebbe, who happens to be Rav. Rav received authorization from Rebbe Chia, and Rebbe Chia received it from Rebbe. So my Rishus goes back to Rebbe. So he's saying now to the members of the house of the Resh Galusa, so don't argue with me. Don't take any issue with me, because I have authorization from Eretz Yisrael. Now, as we just learned together, we just concluded that the authorization of Eretz Yisrael is not going to help you in Bavel. It's not universally accepted. So what kind of argument was he making? The Gemara says he was making an argument, but that's it. So the Gemara says he was just simply making an argument, meaning, okay, you debate, and sometimes in the course of debate, so you say something. It doesn't necessarily mean it's true, it's just simply you're trying to make a point, and okay, it's just an argument. The Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, so now we know that Rishus given in Eretz Yisrael is not universally accepted. So why did Rabbi Bar Chana go through the trouble of receiving authorization in Eretz Yisrael, knowing that he's going out to Bavel, and knowing that's not universally accepted? So it's not. What was the point? So the Gemara says, "La'ayaros hamdim al hagvulim." So the Gemara says, "Well, it does help in terms of the bordering cities. For those cities that border on Eretz Yisrael, even though they're technically in Bavel, so the authorization is not universally accepted, but at least it's covered by those bordering cities." Okay, my Rishusa.
His psak remains, even though it was
right. In other words, you're correct. In other words, he could still paskin, yeah. But in other words, in the event that he makes a mistake, he's going to have to pay.
But I'm saying the psak that he gave.
I'm agreeing with you.
Remain.
I'm agreeing. So my Rishusa, the Gemara says. So what exactly is this authority? Meaning, let's be specific. So the Gemara tells the following story. We go back to Rabbi Bar Chana, and he's about to go down to Bavel. So Amarlei, so now he's leaving. His uncle Rebbe Chia, now I know it's his uncle, the Gemara is going to tell us that in just a moment. He's leaving his uncle Rebbe Chia, and he's leaving Rebbe. They were the Tanaim of Eretz Yisrael, and now he's leaving and he's going to Bavel. Now I don't have any more details of the story. Why is he going to Bavel? Well, you know, what's happening over here? So I can't give you any more details. I'd love to know more, but he's leaving them. And now basically what he's doing is he's going to be conferred authorization. What you and I would kind of describe as smicha. But again, I'm avoiding the word, I'm using the word rishus. Basically, it's the permission to be given in order to judge. Now, we also just learned together that it's not universally accepted. So, and the Gemara already addressed the question of what was the point of him going through this process, knowing that he's going to Bavel, and knowing that it's not universally accepted. Okay, but anyway, we're going back to the story where he was given smicha. So, Amar Le Rebbe Chia Le Rebbe. So, Rebbe Chia says to Rebbe, Ben Achi Yore Labavo, my nephew, meaning this is Rabbi Bar Chana. Chana was Rebbe Chia's brother. I know it's unusual. It's an unusual name for a guy. I get it. But Chana was his brother. And so Rebbe Chia says to Rebbe, my brother's son, my nephew, so he's going down to Bavel. Yore? So do you confer authorization upon him so that he can address questions on Isser Veheter? So Rebbe's answer was Yore. Yes. Yes. Yeah, I give him that permission.
But doesn't an average person have ne'emanus regarding Israel?
Yeah, we're not talking about ne'emanus. We're talking about being asked a question and giving an answer on a halachic question. So the Gemara says, Yadin? He says, what about monetary cases? Does he have your authorization to judge monetary cases? Rebbe's answer was Yadin. Yes. Yatir Becharos? What about the following? Firstborn animal has Kedushas Bechor. Without the base of Mikdash, so what happens when you have a firstborn animal? What happens is that you stare at it for a very long time. You can't eat it. It has Kedusha. You can't bring it onto the base of Mikdash. There is no base of Mikdash. And so what do you do with an animal with Kedusha with nothing to do with it? With no base of Mikdash to bring? So you just basically, you let it graze in your backyard. You tag it, it's a Bechor, and now for the rest of its life has Kedushas Bechor. However, if it develops a blemish, and you have an expert coming and taking a look at it, and rendering a decision that this is a Mum Kavu, it's a permanent blemish, then from that point going forward now, you can eat it even without having offered it on the Mizbeach. Who is going to establish and make the decision, the determination that it has a blemish? The answer is going to be somebody who's an expert on this matter. And so now this is the third category, third area of Rishus that Rabbi Chiya was looking to give to his nephew from Rabbi, and that is, does he have the ability to be Mati Bechoros, to permit the firstborn? And Rebbe's answer was, Yatir, yes he does. Okay, so, three areas halacha where Rebbe conferred Rishus and Tzmicha upon Rebbe Chia's nephew. One was in the ability to paskin Isser V'Heter. A second was to paskin Aman Terer Lo. And a third was to look at animals and make a decision whether the mum was a mum kavua.
What's the two areas that require Tzmicha?
So nowadays, right, nowadays you hear somebody receiving Tzmicha, what's described as Yorah Yorah. Or Yadin Yadin.
Never
Yatir Yatir. You don't hear anyone here receiving smicha and Yatir Yatir. And now you know, after having learned the Gemara now, you know where the phrase comes from. The phrase comes from Sanhedrin, Daf Hey, today's Daf. But the meaning in the context of the Gemara, the double language was a question answer. Rabbi Chiya says to Rabbi, Yoresh, like, are you ready to confer smicha upon him? And Rabbi's answer was, yeah, Yoresh. Okay. Now, ki havanach is Rav LaBavel, Rav goes down to Bavel, Amarle, Rabbi Chiya, LaRav. So now, we're going to have basically the same story, but the only difference over here is that this is another nephew of Rabbi Chiya. This is Rav. And this is Rav heading down to Bavel, and I use the word down, by the way, because that's the Gemara's language of Nachas. Nachas means to go down. Even though geographically it's to the northeast, but the Gemara always uses the words Nachas. In other words, going down to Kedusha. Okay, anyway. So, Amale Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Ben Achosi Yor LaBavel. So my nephew Rav is going down to Bavel. So again, looking to confer authorization for Rav from Rebbe. Yora, Yora. Yadin, Yadin. Yatir Bechoros al Yatir. So Rav received 2 out of 3. He went 2 for 3 for the day. He received Yora, Yora. He received Yadin, Yadin. But he did not receive the third category of Mati Bechoros. So Maishna Lamar de Kakari ben Achim, Maishna Lamar de Kakari ben Achusi. So the Gemara has just a couple of follow-up questions regarding these two stories that we just learned. First of all, Rabbi Chiya was looking to get smicha for his two nephews from Rabbi. Both of them were his nephews, but one described as his brother's son, and the other one describing as his sister's son. So the Gemara says now, the discrepancy could just be explained by the simple facts on the ground. Meaning, it could just simply be that one is his brother's son and the other is his sister's son. But the Gemara says, but we happen to know that Rav was a nephew of Rabbi Chiya, not only through the mother, but also through the father as well. Now, this is going to just leave a question mark in your head. And I'm not going to go through the family lineage right now to explain this to you. I'm just going to say it. You're not going to fully understand it, and I apologize for that. But Rav was a nephew to Rabbi Chiya, both through his mother and through his father. Now, I know that presents an obvious question. Correct. In other words, there is a family lineage, a complicated one, that gets us to this point in time. All we need to know right now is what I just said is true. And nobody violated any sir. So the Gemara says, Aibu, Chana, Shiloh, Marta, Rabbi Chiya. So the five brothers over here. Now, Marta, I'm not sure if it's a brother or sister. In the context of a Gemara, it sounds like a brother. But anyway, Chana for sure was a brother. Rashi presents it that way. And it's clear from the Gemara's context that that's true. So, Chana and Aibu, together with Rabbi Chiya, were brothers.
You had brothers.
Again, for our purposes right now, all we need to know is that they were brothers. So Kulu b'nei Abba bar Acha karsal mikafrei havu, and they all share the same father. So the Gemara says, so now we know Rav bar Chvua dehava bar Achtei. So Rabba bar Chana bar Chvua dehava bar Achtei. So the Gemara says like this. So when it comes to now his two nephews, one he described as his sister's son, and the other one he described as his brother's son. Now it happens to be that we just learned together that they are both sons of brothers of Rabbi Chiya. But the Gemara says that when it comes to Rabba Bar Chana, he only was a nephew through the brother. When it comes to Rav, he was a nephew through both a brother and through a sister. And again, I know that leaves a question mark. I'm sorry for not fully explaining this, but for now, trust me. The Gemara in Pesachim, by the way, and Daf Dalet, goes through the same discussion of Rav being a nephew to Rabbi Chiya, both through a brother and through a sister.
Is a niece also referred to as a sister in the Torah? Like, Avram, like, referred to Sarah as his sister? Technically, it's not sure that it's...
Okay, it could be, but in other words...
He married the niece?
For our purposes right now, let's just leave this alone. Okay, it's already... Okay, anyway. So number one says the Gemara that the reason why he referred to Abba Bar Chana as his brother's son is because that's it. It was just his brother's son. But as far as Rav is, I'm sorry, Rabba Bar Chana. But as far as Rav is concerned, so it was both his brother's son and his sister's son. And so, okay, so he referred to him as his sister's son. Ibai Sam of the Gemara points out another answer right now on the top of Daf Hamad Beis. Al Shem Chachmaso. Rav was brilliant. And because Rav was so brilliant, so we refer to him as his sister's son. The word sister, in context, and which we're about to see, describes somebody's brilliance. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Emor l'chachma chotiat. You say to Chachma that you're my sister. Rashi, not over here, but Rashi elsewhere gives a couple of explanations of why you would refer to brilliance as your sister. Again, I'm just going to bypass it for now. Anyway, so another explanation, another reason why he described Rav as his sister's son. It was an expression to describe Rav's brilliance. Anyway, next, another follow-up question the Gemara wants to know. When Rabba Bar Chana got smicha from Rabbi, so he got smicha in all three categories, Yor Yor, Yadin Yadin, and Yati Bechoros. When Rav got smicha from Rabbi, he only got smicha in Yor Yor, Yadin Yadin, but not Mati Bechoros. Why was he denied the third authorization? The Gemara goes on to explain that question, to discuss. Yatir Bechoros al Yatir, my time. Why was Rav not given the third authorization? So the Gemara gives a very simple answer, which is, well, he was not given authorization because he didn't have the knowledge base. He simply didn't know the reality of what's a blemish, what's not a blemish, and he didn't have an internship. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, first of all, in terms of his cognitive ability, he was brilliant, as we just pointed out. So the Gemara says, well, maybe he just simply didn't have the information. The Gemara says that's also not true. V'amar Rav Shmona Asar Chadashim Gedalti Eitzel Roei Behema Leida Ezumum Kavu Vezu Over. The Gemara says that we know that Rav had a fellowship. For 18 months he was on the farm with the animals, learning the anatomy and the physical makeup of an animal in order to establish what would be considered a mum kavu, what would be considered a mum over. So now, he had the smarts and he had the knowledge base and he did a fellowship on this. So the Gemara says, so if all this is true, so now, so why was Rav denied this third authorization? So Elal Chalko Kavala Rabba Bar Chana. So the Gemara gives one answer. The one answer is that he was denied it not because he couldn't receive it, meaning in theory he could receive it, but remember, two people went out to Bavel in order to take leadership positions. One was Rabba Bar Chana and the other one was Rav. If Rav would have received all three levels of authorization of Rishus, so then Rabba Bar Chana's position would be compromised. And Rebbe understood this, and so because of the dynamics of making sure that there would be more cover given to Rabba Bar Chana, I'm suggesting that this has to do with just keeping more stability in the leadership, so that there would not be two people of equal leadership, and it would kind of distill the leadership. But I'm saying this as just my suggestion. So what Rebbe did is he basically held back on Rav, and he only conferred two authorizations on Rav. Ibai Sam, the Gemara says Mishum Hagufe, the Rav Bikiya B'Mumei Tfei. The Gemara says, or maybe not. Maybe it's such an interesting answer of the Gemara over here. The reason why Rebbe withheld the third authorization for Rav is not because he knew too little, but because he knew too much. He knew too much. And the Gemara says, Vishari Mumid Eloyadi Inche. And now, because of his, and remember, he did an 18-month fellowship. So, and because he knew so much, so he would go now, and he would look at an animal with the question of, is it have a mum kavur, mum over? And he, because of his specialty in this field, so he's gonna offer a psak, which is that, yeah, it's mum kavur. People are gonna look. Now, what Rav is looking at, what the other people are looking at, even though they're looking at the same thing, but because of his specialty, so he understood everything down to the detail. And so he offered a ruling, and people are not gonna understand why he ruled that way. And they're going to say, look, I don't know why Rav said it was mutter, but he said it was mutter. And they're going to look at another animal, and because of their inability to understand the details that Rav understood, so they're going to then try to take his psak, apply it elsewhere, and because they don't have the knowledge base, it's going to lead to it's going to lead to gross errors on their part. Okay, so so two follow-up questions that Gemara asked regarding the smicha that was conferred by Rebbe on his two nephews. One, why was Rabba referred to as his brother's son and Rav as his sister's son? Two, why was Rava withheld the third level of smicha, the third category of smicha? And the Gemara responded to both these questions. Let's continue in the Gemara. Yora, igamer rishus alamelu lemishkal. Gemara says, look, when it comes to monetary law, you understand why you need authorization. Because you want to protect yourself. You want to work with immunity. In the event that you happen to make a mistake, you're obviously not intending on doing so, and you're obviously looking to make the best ruling possible, but in the event you make a mistake because you have authorization, so you're provided immunity, and you won't have to pay for the mistakes. Gemara says, I understand that by yadin yadin. But by yara yara, in other words, it's a sefer heter. What's going to happen? Why do you need authorization? Now, it could very well be, in other words, yeah, in other words, right, exactly. It could very well be that, even in cases of Issa Vahetta, there's going to be financial loss. I'll give you a simple example. You shechted an animal, and you want to know now, was the shechita good or not? And something went wrong, and now it's a shayla. And you go to your Rav, and there, this is Issa Vahetta, and he offers a ruling. Now, this ruling obviously would lead to, if he's wrong, to significant financial loss. So, in other words, the Gemara's question is funny. I can easily come up with a scenario in which, even in Yara Yara, it's financial loss. Maybe, in defense of the Gemara's question, meaning because what the answer I just gave seems to be very good, maybe in defense of the Gemara's question, meaning when you ask a question like that, maybe categorically, that fits more under Yadin Yadin. It's kind of hard to defend that, but okay. Anyway, the Gemara asked a question. The Gemara is going to give an answer. Mishum Maisa Shahi, the Gemara tells the following story. Rebbe was on a tour, and Rebbe visited a town. And in this town, and he saw the members of the town where they were kneading their dough, and they had no concern and no consideration for tuma. And again, why it could be that the story took place in Eretz Yisrael. And people in Eretz Yisrael were nizdar b'tumah, that they were careful about tumah tahara. It could be that they were kohanim. Whatever the case may be, meaning that they don't seem to pay any attention to tumah tahara. So Amar lehem ne'amata megablin is the same b'tumah. So he turns to them and he says, "Look, I don't understand. The kelim use their tummy clearly, and what are you doing?" So Amar lo tamed echa balakanya v'horalana mei b'tayim ein machshirin. So their response is, "Look, we had a tamed chacham passing through town." Right, scholar in residence. And he told us that, you know, the water that you get from the swamp, so it's not machshir. It will not render the dough, dough tamei, because we know that for any food to become tamei, it has to first come into contact with one of the seven liquids. Now, one of the seven liquids happens to be water. But what they heard the passing Talmud Chacham say, yeah, but the water that comes from the swamp, that water doesn't count. That's what they heard him say. Now, to you and I, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, water is water. What difference does it make where the source of the water is? Now, the Gemara tells us the big reveal. V'hu mei beitzim darish lahu. He didn't say the word mei bitzayim, the swamp water. He said mei beitzim. He was talking about the liquid that comes from the egg. Oh, that's not one of the seven liquids, right? Meaning that's what he said, and he's right. But they didn't hear it right. Remember, he was coming from a different town. His twang was different. He had a different. He spoke in a different dialect. Vinu sever may be time kamar v'tau nami baha. And the Gemara says, and also, there was another reason that led to this error, and that is a Mishnah. The Mishnah in part tells us may karmion umay piga psulim imne shehain may. Now we have the word bitsayim, or maybe the word beitzim. Either way, in other words, the Mishnah tells us as follows: we know that for the para aduma you need the ashes of a red cow, and you need mayim chayim. You need spring water. So the Mishnah tells us that these waters are not considered Mayim Chaim. Now, why are they not considered Mayim Chaim? A discussion in of itself. For our purposes right now, I will say it simply and flatly, it's not Mayim Chaim. And therefore, the Mishnah says it's no good. So what the people in the community did is they conflated these two issues. They thought, oh, it's not Mayim Chaim for the Paraduma, oh, therefore it's not Machshir. Meaning, once it loses its halachic status of water vis-a-vis Paraduma, oh, it's not water lagabe machshirin as well. Veloi, but the Gemara says, but these are two separate areas of halacha. It's just simply not true. Hasam lenyan chatas bina mayim chayim. Hachachshirei kol dehu machshirei. So the Gemara says, but there are two separate issues regarding the parameter, the criteria when it comes to para aduma. You need mayim chayim. Doesn't qualify as mayim chayim. But in terms of being mekabel tuma machshir lekabel tuma, it's water. And therefore, for sure, it's going to be Machshir Tuma. So, what do you have over here? You have a Tamil Chacham coming through town, offering a ruling, but because he wasn't careful how he said it, because he wasn't careful about whether or not they received it correctly, and they heard him correctly, so now they're operating under a false conception of what is the correct halacha. Now, Ba'os Tana, we learned in the Bresa, Ba'os Tasha, Gazru Tamil, Al Yore, Elaim Ke, Nota, Rishus, Me Rabbo, that a student may not offer a ruling unless he receives permission from his Rebbe. And what does that have to do with communication? Rashi writes, it's a great Rashi, Nota, Rishus, Me Rabbo, V'chiyayv Le Rabbo, Rishusa, once you're authorized to do so, once you receive smicha, Rashi writes, Medag Daik Be, She'e Lashono Pasuach. Now you're going to be careful every time you speak. Because you're not just speaking as a person, you're speaking as a person who receives smicha. You are now representing the body of the musmachim. And velo yitu ashomim estevarav. And now that you're speaking as a musmach, you're going to be very careful about not only what you say, but how you say it and how it's received. And so therefore, a person should not rule unless he receives smicha. It will really promote him to be more careful about the way he says it. Let's just do a couple more lines of Gemara, and we'll continue tomorrow. Tanchum bered Rabbi Ami iklele chatar. So Tanchum, who was the son of Rabbi Ami, went to the town of Chatar. Darshlohu, he said, "Mutalosos chitim bePesach." So you're allowed to soak wheat on Pesach before you grind it and turn it into matzah. First of all, we just don't think this way at all. Like, we would not consider making matzah on Pesach, not on Yom Tov Pesach, not on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Or in other words, to us, it's like it's inconceivable. But if you think about it, what's the big deal? Meaning, you take wheat, you grind it down, you add water to it, and you bake it before it turns into chametz. It's not that big a deal, but I know you and I wouldn't. First of all, we don't have the ovens, and secondly, we don't think this way. But the ruling over here actually introduced another chiddush, which is you can even soak the grain before you grind it. Apparently, soaking helps grinding it. You could soak the grain before grinding it. This was the ruling that was offered. So, Amru lo lav Rabbi Mana deminsur ikahacha v'tanya tamid al yore halacha b'makom rabo. So the Gemara says, look, that's an interesting ruling, and we could discuss that ruling, but you're not in a position to offer that ruling because we have Rabbi Mani who lives in our community, and you're not allowed to paskin a halacha in front of your Rebbe. V'tanya tamid al yore halacha b'makom rabo leim kenai yorochok mimenu gimel parsoz keneged machane Yisrael. So unless you are at a distance of three parsos, and Rashi over here takes the time to go through the fact that in the Midbar, the entire geographical area of Bnei Yisrael was three parsos. Moshe can be in one place. You have a question, so you're going to go to Moshe, even though you're three parsos away. If you're greater than three parsos away, so then you, the student, can rule, even though your Rebbe is somewhere around, but he is not within proximity. So, Amalu Lava Daiti. So the Gemara says, I didn't know. Meaning, I didn't know that my Rebbe was in proximity, and so therefore I offered a ruling, but had I known, I wouldn't have done that, not with my Rebbe within proximity. Okay, let's pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Just a quick recap. Today we finished up the discussion of the Gemara of Yeshem LaMikra, Yeshem LaMesaris. If there's a discrepancy between the Torah, the way the Torah is pronounced versus the way the Torah is written, which is going to be the determining factor? So that was all of yesterday's daf and just a little bit of today's daf.
What was the bottom line?
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. I don't know. Meaning the Tanaim argued this very issue. I don't know if there is a bottom line on that issue, to be honest. We talked today about judging and receiving authorization to judge. And when you receive authorization to judge, so based on the principle of Hefker, based on Hefker, so you work and you serve under a certain amount of immunity, where now you can, now you're quote unquote licensed, and therefore you can judge with a certain amount of financial protection. So, a fascinating discussion over the course of today's daf, and that Bavel is viewed as the monarchy, that's the Shevet. But Eretz Yisrael is more like a governor, like a governing body. And if you receive authorization in Bavel, that's universal. If you receive authorization in Eretz Yisrael, it's localized. And we then went through two stories in the Gemara where Rebbe conferred smicha on two nephews of Rebbe Chia when they were going down to the Bavel. A lot of questions that we asked today. If it's not universally accepted, what was the point of them getting smicha? The one was referred to as a brother son, the other a sister son. Rav did not receive all three categories of smicha. Rabba did. The Gemara addressed all these questions. And then the Gemara then went on to discuss that even if you're not a musmach, aside from being received immunity, also there's another consideration, which is your communication and your clarity of point. And when you receive smicha, so then you can rule. If you don't, you should. And Rashi over here tells us that once you receive smicha, you're going to be much more careful about what you say. And we concluded today with a discussion of paskening halacha in front of your Rebbe. The Gemara says you cannot do that. You have to be within, out of a certain range in order to pasken halacha. But when you're within a certain range, you cannot pasken halacha in front of your Rebbe. One Amara did, but the Gemara says, but he didn't know that his Rebbe was in town at the time.